There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with tonight's episode of Bench with Bubba, a couple things to talk to you about. First, Draft. Draft.com, draft in your app store, great way to play daily fantasy sports. They do the snake-style drafts just the way you like them. They do auction-style drafts now, and most importantly, the best ball drafts that are sweeping the nation. They have a $25 entry, $1 million grand prize for football best balls going on, but they have PGA, MLB, NFL, and so much more, NBA. And if you're new to Draft, use promo code SDSports, SD as in dog, sports, get a free $3 entry into any tournament of your choice. It could be an auction, a best ball, a snake draft, you name it, they got it. $3 free entry, first time deposit using promo code SDSports. Another great site to play fantasy on is Thrive Fantasy. Check them out on your app store at Thrive Fantasy. When you use promo code SDSports, you get a free $10 when you deposit $10 or more for the first time. It is awesome. They just introduced PGA into the mix. They have all sports, MLB, NFL, NBA. It's cool. It's prop-style bets. You pick 10 props that you like out of the list of props, and they're graded differently on plus minuses. And if and you pick two ice bets, and if you have the best score, you win. It's simple as that. So deposit at Thrive Fantasy. First deposit of $10, get a free $10 at Thrive Fantasy by using promo code SDSports. Also, if you give a rating and review on iTunes, I'd really, really appreciate it. It would help the podcast out and mean a ton to me. It's under Bench with Bubba on iTunes, where you're listening to this podcast, most likely, or other listening avenues. Welcome to Bench with Bubba, episode 189 with Scott Genstead of RotoWire, talking week 16 fab, second half fantasy strategies, and much, much more. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 189. Special guest, recurring guest to the podcast tonight to talk about some recent fantasy baseball news and the week that was in the FAB market, TGFBI, NFBC, all that great stuff. You can find him over at rotowire.com and on Twitter at Scott Genstead. Scott, how are we doing, man?
Good, man. How are you? I appreciate you having me on. It's good to jump on again. I had fun last time. I'm looking forward to talking some baseball with you.
Yep, always enjoy the Twitter interactions or between the DMs and talking golf and all the other good stuff and listen to your guys' show. So
nice,
good to chat with you. Just talking some baseball, always fun because football, sadly as it may be, is just around the corner. But I know you're getting cranked up for that as well.
I am. I'm trying to avoid as much as I can, but I'm getting sucked in a little bit. That's true. I'm doing the RotoWire Friday football podcast. So we're starting up this week. So I have to got to jump in with both feet a little bit this week, but I'm still fully in baseball mode.
Yep, I'm 100% with you. I did my first Bench with Bubba football last Wednesday, and it took every ounce of me to do that one. I was like kicking and screaming like a little kid, not wanting to do that. It's baseball. So I totally feel you there.
Yeah.
Let's talk Oakland A's. Let's kick it off right with it. Homer Bailey is traded to the Oakland A's. What's your take on this? As an A's guy, Homer Bailey's been good. He's been serviceable. What's your thoughts on this deal, especially with the fantasy impact?
Yeah, I mean, I'll hit it from the A's side first. You know, it's one of those things. I mean, they need starting pitching. It's pretty clear with Jesus Luzardo pretty much done. I don't think he's going to make any starts this year. You know, they're going to be careful with him and maybe some things out of the pen, but he was kind of the big arm they're going to have after the break, and he had the lat strain. And then Sean Manaea looked poor over the weekend. AJ Puck's going to come back only as a reliever. So they're just hurting for innings in the rotation. They're getting some good ones from unexpected sources. You know, Mike Fiers has been really good. Brett Anderson, surprisingly, actually been pretty good. But I don't know if Bailey's anything more than eating five innings. I mean, he's got a 4.8 ERA. Last year was a 6.09 ERA in 106 innings. I don't see a lot here. The only hope I have, really, you know, ugly hard hit rate is just the fact that the A's tend to do well with kind of fringy arms. You don't expect it to. Obviously, you know, pitching in a good park, really good defense behind him. Infield defense has, you know, three really good guys. And, you know, Profar can play a little bit, but the arm's a little suspect. But same with Barreto. So, but short third and first base, you got potential gold gloves. I'm not too optimistic about it, but maybe he can get through five innings, get up three or four runs and hope the offense hooks him up. But not something I was really excited about.
Yeah, it really surprised me. I was actually playing golf, and I had Bailey in my DFS lineup, and I got the update that he's pulled, and I'm like, huh, what is going on here? So I take him out real quick, and then the next thing I see is A's acquire Homer Bailey. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, that's kind of strange out of nowhere, and reports said it, like, escalated really quickly. Like, they talk, boom, boom, done. The thing I could see is you mentioned the A's find ways between the defense, the ballpark. Like, look at Mike Fiers this year. He's been outstanding. He was pretty good last year, too.
Yep.
And you see little things like that. Bailey, to me, like, by no means is he a guy an everyday option, but streamable for sure. Like, if you get one of those two-star weeks at home, I think he's worth a dart. But I guess time will tell, because it is Homer Bailey after all. I mean, it's in the name. It's Homer.
So it is. It's
there.
Not a good name for a pitcher. Yeah, I'm kind of the same, right? In like a 15-team league, I think he's streamable. Maybe in a 12 or if he's got two really good home starts. But in a 15-teamer, you know, if he's home against Seattle or something like that, you get a good matchup home. We might see throwing him out there as kind of your ninth guy. But not someone I'm looking to pick up and, you know, kind of hold on the roster thinking we're going to get a bunch of good starts on the stretch. The last five have been pretty good if you want to kind of play with, you know, sample sizes a bit. But he's still Homer Bailey. He still had 6.5 strikeouts per nine last year and a 6 ERA. So I'm hesitant to get too excited.
Yep, 100% with you there. Another one that's hesitant to get many people excited because he's staying in the AL East,
yeah,
but he's going to Boston, and there's going to be some pretty high intense baseball games in September in Boston. And Andrew Cashner is now a Boston Red Sox. Do you have any interest in an Andrew Cashner in fantasy?
I don't. I know a lot of people have written about him in the last couple of weeks, how hot he's been. I think it's going to be a disaster in Boston. Since June 1st, 1.41 ERA, looks really good, looks really shiny, 32 innings, only 18 strikeouts. The BABIP in that stretch is 198, which is beyond absurd for a guy like Cashner. You know, strikeouts are 6.2 per nine right now. The swing strike rate is up a little bit, but, you know, overall, this does very little for me. Gives up a lot of hard contact. I think it's going to be a mess in Boston.
Yep, 100% with you. One thing I'll say, and yes, he's been okay. He's been serviceable, but it's also a lot easier to pitch when you have nothing to pitch for, basically.
Yeah.
Now you're going to be – everything's on the line in Boston. Think about a Sunday night baseball game in the Bronx. That's going to be disgusting. So, yeah, I'm with you there.
For a team that's on the edge of the playoffs right now, like, they're not cruising into the division. Yeah, they're out of it right now. They need to win a lot of games. Yeah, if he doesn't work right away, that'll get pretty ugly pretty fast. Those will be some high intensity innings, and I want no part of it. I'm not picking him up. I'm not grabbing him anywhere. I'm letting somebody else deal with that in Fenway.
Yeah, like you said, a team that's on the cusp. It's not even in a team that's expected to be in a team the defending champions. It's pretty crazy to see how they've just tiptoed through this whole season between their bullpen. They need starting pitching, and they're like, nope, we're not spending any money. Not like we haven't made any, but we're not spending it. It's pretty frustrating if I was a Red Sox fan, to be totally honest with it. That's pretty odd.
Yeah, I guess they've had so much good lately that they probably get a pass. But it's just I don't know if they're trying to get under the luxury tax for a year or something like that. But it's been a weird year in Boston between the Kimbrel stuff and not signing a closer, and now it's going to be Nate Eovaldi. Apparently, sources say he's going to be back in a week. It's just it's been a weird season in Boston for a team like you said that has a ton of cash.
You just mentioned Eovaldi there, and I asked someone last week on the show about him, but he's going to be coming back there pretty soon. Like, what's your interest level? I know saves are at premium, especially in deep leagues. But what's your interest level with Eovaldi? Because it's a guy we've never seen do it. And there's always that phrase, you know, it takes a certain type of guy to close. We don't know if he's that guy. So how aggressive would you be if he's still somehow available on the wire?
You know, I hate to say it, but I do kind of like it. He feels to me like a guy that always had that stuff, but just couldn't figure out as a starter how to strike guys out. I think that in one or two inning stints, he kind of showed it in the playoffs last year. I think him fully gassing it out, you know, he throws really hard. He throws, 95, 96, up to 97 last year. I kind of think it's a good fit. I think it's the mindset and the makeup, who knows when he get there. And like you said, you know, being in Boston, those are going to be some tough innings. But I kind of like the setup for him as a closer. I think he's got kind of the perfect arm for it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you there. Because if he can just go an inning, even two, he can maybe be one of those long relief guys. We know he's got the stamina and just throw that gas. I think there is something like that. We saw it in the playoffs. So definitely something there. Let's go to the New York Mets. Zach Wheeler, this one dropped this afternoon, goes on the IL with shoulder fatigue. And I saw a bunch of weird stats. Like, there's only like Verlander, Scherzer, and I think one other top-end pitcher that throw more pitches per start, like all kinds of crazy stats. Now, there's two ways to look at this before I get your opinion. It's either they're going to rest him for a couple starts to not get hurt and trade him, or they really need some help here because something's not right. It's one of the two. You're supposed to be back here middle to end of next week, get a couple starts before the deadline. What's your level of concern here with Zach Wheeler?
Pretty concerned. I mean, you do make a good point that potentially they want to trade him and they're just trying to ease off him. But, you know, if you want to trade a guy, bringing up shoulder soreness and shoulder fatigue is not a good way to raise the market value. Frustrating from a fantasy perspective, though, because you have 4.7 ERA. Obviously, if you own him, you've thrown all 119 of those innings. I kind of felt like we were going to get a good stretch here at some point. You know, still has, you know, strikeouts are up from last year. The walks are a little bit down. I kind of felt like we were going to get a good 5 or 6 start stretch here. Now I feel like we're just stuck with a bad ERA.
Yeah, I'm with you. It felt like any moment it was going to change. You know, Matt Modica is always putting awesome stats out. He mentions Wheeler a lot. And there's so many things to like. Like I mentioned, he throws all the innings and the pitches like some of these elite guys. The strikeout rate's there. It just the other shoe hadn't dropped yet. You felt it was coming. Maybe it still will. Maybe it's just the rest he needs, which, like you said, you made a good point. If you're going to trade him, maybe you just skip a start.
Yeah, right.
You don't need to put him on the IL. But
how about some calf soreness or a sore foot or something? If it's not something with the shoulder, that you don't just bring that up. I just because anytime you get shoulder and any guy like Wheeler who's missed so much time in the past, I'm pretty concerned.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And with the one trade deadline only, some team's going to have to take the gamble regardless.
I really like the one trade deadline. I think it makes it a lot more fun.
Yeah, it's going to get real dicey here real quick, and it's going to be – as a Giants fan, I could have a whole new team in about 3 weeks, especially pitching-wise.
Or they could add a couple pieces. You're kind of hanging on the wild card now with the fact they score 8 or 10 runs every game, or 17 as it was today.
I'm kind of terrified of that because
– I know, me too.
as much as I like the idea of continuing to compete, I'm also a realist, and, like, they really need to keep rebuilding. Like, don't push this off any longer.
Yeah, but, I think having Farhan in the front office is a big thing. I think that he's pretty good at looking forward rather than just kind of, you know, the Bochy last year thing could impact a little bit. I hope they don't do that. But I would have traded Will Smith and maybe Bumgarner in the offseason, so it'll be really interesting to see if they're kind of on the outskirts of the wild card. But a lot of teams in between them, if they stick it out or if they sell.
Yeah, that's the thing is they say they're only like 4 or 5 games out, but how many teams they have to leapfrog, that's quite the task.
Yeah, it's a lot of teams that have to not play great for you to pass them too.
Yeah, and I wanted them to trade Bumgarner last deadline. Like I said, get as much as you can for him, but we'll see, and I'm with you. Like you said, with Zahidi, I am a big fan of what he's done, and I believe in it. So it's unorthodox. It's something the Giants aren't used to, but I'm all for it.
Well, that's what happens when you come steal some Oakland A's guys.
At least you said Oakland A's. Thank you. Don't say that other team from LA that
he's originally groomed to the A's, so he's always an A's guy to me.
Well, that works for me because I'm always smitten, as they say, for the young Oakland A's players, Chapman, Olsen, and company. Like I just love those kids. Some of that talent.
Chapman's a special dude.
He's amazing. Like there will be multiple MVPs in his future. There are definitely going to be coming.
I sure hope so because watching him play third base for as long as I can will be a special treat.
The only shame with Matt Chapman was the fact his dad was trying to strike him out instead of throw home runs to him in the Derby. That was rough.
Did you see that Pitching Ninja had an overlay of like a fastball inside and a slider away? It was absolutely amazing. It was savage, but it was just so gold.
Yes, it was one of the best tweets I've ever seen. But let's go to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Breaking news like an half hour before we started recording.
Yep.
Chris Taylor diagnosed with a left fractured forearm. That takes time. There's no set timetable. They're saying 2 weeks or so, but breaks are breaks. It'll be interesting. Matt Beattie gets recalled. Taylor was playing well What's your thoughts here?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the one team that can do it is the Dodgers, and they have so many different interchangeable pieces that they probably won't suffer very much. Fantasy-wise, it probably helps Kike Hernandez because he was about to start to lose some playing time with Pollock back and Corey Seager back. Now probably he gets a few more starts than he would have. You know, you'll probably get a lot of Muncy at second base, maybe some Jock Peterson back at first base. They've kind of been playing with that. So I think more than anything, it helps a few of the other fringe guys. But, you know, definitely, obviously, if you are a Taylor owner, that really sings. That the sound from that hit off his wrist was nasty last night.
Yeah, that was pretty darn brutal, and he was starting to get it going, so it's a shame it went down like that.
It did.
Let's go to the Cardinals. This is an interesting one. Michael Wacha has been a mess. We thought Adam Wainwright was going to be the one going to the bullpen at some point in time. Nope, he's actually been usable. Michael Wacha goes to the bullpen, and Daniel Ponce de Leon, who made the spot start the other day, is going to get a chance to stick in this rotation. Do you have any interest in a guy like Ponce de Leon, or is this just a mess right now in St. Louis?
It's funny. I do a Sunday night podcast with Jeff Erickson. We're talking about Ponce de Leon, and you look at his major league stints, and they're fantastic. You know, 1.9 a year this year, and he's like a 2.7 guy last year. But then you look at the minor leagues, and it's a ton of walks. There's some pretty good ERAs in there, but the walks really scare me. He was 4.7 walks last year in AAA, 4.9 walks this year in AAA. So, you know, maybe he's a guy that has figured out how to pitch in the majors, but that, you know, that's really rare. So I was initially buying in and pretty excited about him, and then after I took a little closer look, I pulled back a number of my bids that I had on him in some 12 teamers. He was gone in my 15 teamers, but I'm a little bit worried about the walks more than anything.
Yeah, I'm with you, because that's going to get these kids in trouble with the live ball, a couple walks and a home run, and boom, you're dead.
So. Yeah, it's by the way, the live ball is just stupid.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, part of me is like, okay, it's fun because we get offense, but then when the Giants score 19 runs, I don't care if it's Coors or not. That is just stupid. Like,
yeah, I watched the highlights. When AJ Pollock hits two home runs that had no business being home runs, I get one of them was pesky pole in Fenway, but the one he hit to left center, like over the monster, he like reached out and kind of stabbed at, and it went way over. I was like, it gets to not be fun. I mean, if Joey Gallo and those guys hit home runs, that's fine. They're not gonna lose any home runs or gain any home runs from this. But I don't know, when you get home runs like that, it's just frustrating, especially if you want to you want to see some good pitching. It's got to be frustrating to be a pitcher right now.
It's got to be the worst. Like literally. When the Red Sox tied it up last night, first Xander looks like he gets jammed on a fastball and it's on the top of the monster. Like, that's a flyout in 29 other ballparks. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a joke. That was a combination of the juice ball and the ballpark. But then even JD's oppo homer after that, like, it was laced, but I thought there was no chance that was leaving the ballpark.
There's been a couple balls, like, I'm like, oh, that's a double in the gap. And it goes like 10 feet over the fence. It's a bit much, and I'm one that likes home runs. I like offense. Yep. I think it's fun, but I think it just tipped a little bit too far this year.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it more when we talk second half strategy. But it really take into like next season. How do we evaluate this? Because 2 years ago we thought juice ball, and then they changed them back on us, and we didn't know that. So you kind of draft differently, and I guess it's an even playing field in the end of the story. But now going into next year. Do you wait Max Scherzer as a potential like 1, 2, or 3 pick, like after Trout and Yelich? Like, there's so many weird dynamics now because of what we're seeing. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Right. I say we'll hit it in second half strategy. We can go forward.
Yeah, Cincinnati Reds, Jesse Winker. This was kind of scary. Like, he's not having the year we all hoped he would have, but he leaves with tightness in his side. Sounds kind of like oblique related. No news has come out today. But not ideal for the kid that's trying to get it going. Any thoughts on Winker, if you're a Winker owner or anything like that?
Yeah, just frustrating because he had 7 right-handers this week, and they've been pretty much strictly platooning him, which has been frustrating as it is. I don't think he has a start against a lefty in like a month and a half or something like that. But overall, he was a target for me. He's a guy that I really liked. I liked how hard he hit the ball. I liked kind of the breakout coming in. And, he has 13 home runs, but he's hitting .260. He has 29 RBIs. I mean, that just hurts if you have him in your lineup every week. Hard hit rate still good, only 11 barrels on the air. So, not really zoning everything up as well as I thought he would. Just been a frustrating guy, and I keep waiting for that breakout. Now he has something in his side or his oblique. Like you said, they're doing some testing later today. But, I'm pretty down on Winker right now. I've been a guy that I've been kind of waiting for that hot streak. I figured the summer in Cincinnati in that ballpark would do it, but I'm less optimistic than I was, say, a month ago.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Really, really stinks there. He's more of a DFS play these days than a season-long play.
Yeah.
Let's go to Toronto. It's kind of surprising. Everyone's favorite at one point in the season, Rowdy Tellez, even had a couple double home run games here and there. He gets optioned to the minors, which was kind of surprising from the Blue Jays. Justin Smoke hasn't really not gotten it going at all. he looks to get some regular playing time again. Is there any interest in maybe giving a Smoke a chance here on the stretch run?
There is a big interest for me. If Smoke is available in your league, I would grab him. I think this is going to be they're going to try and showcase him for a trade. I think that's part of the reason they sent Telez down. But I like a lot of what I see with Smoke. I know the production has not been there. You know, the BABIP is 219, which is just killing him so far. But the strikeout rate's down in the range where it was in his 2017 breakout, which is kind of the big thing he did that year, was just he struck out way less than he did. He's down around 19.5%, which is kind of where he was in 2017. So that's a really good sign. Hitting the ball hard, career high hard hit rate of 43.8%. The walk rate's up to 16%. There's a lot of good stuff here. I just hope it doesn't get buried. You know, the fact that the average is so low, he's been struggling. I hope he doesn't get buried on the bench, platooning or something like that. But I think that these 2 weeks are obviously huge for him. If he can kind of break out a little bit, he might get traded to a good spot, which would be really good. My concern would be he'd be traded somewhere where he doesn't play every day, which would be bad for fantasy wise. But I think I'm buying in on the last 10 weeks of Justin Smoke this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was all over him a month or so ago. He went on his hot streak, made me look smart, and then he went cold again, and they stopped playing him every day, which is really weird to me.
Yeah.
But you look at all his X stats and everything on StatCast, Baseball Savant, and it points to really, really good regression coming his way, at least should be. It's not always the end-all, be-all. Like, it doesn't work for everybody, but more often than not, there's something to it. And, I'm with you there. There's a lot to like about Justin Smoke, and it's crazy how low-owned he is. So he should be out there actually in a lot of wires, especially in 12th team and below. So give him a look.
Yep.
All right, Baltimore Orioles, I'm pretty sure I know the answer here, so this might not be too long. But Dylan Bundy goes on the 10-day IL. He gives up a lot of home runs, but he shows upside. He really does. Not really, but what's your thoughts on Dylan Bundy?
My only interest would be if he were to get traded someplace good, I might take a look. But in Baltimore, I want no part in any way.
Yeah, with you 100% there. Carlos Correa and Aledmys Diaz are starting the rehab assignments, might be back towards the end of this week. Big boost for the Houston Astros, especially when it comes to Correa, who seemed to be getting things right. Had a random weird session at a massage. Just going to leave that one there. But, he should be back, hopefully healed up. Altuve starting to swing it again. Springer's back. Do you think Correa, is it just been injuries this whole time, or is there more to it? Do you believe he's the guy we saw a few years ago, or are we kind of getting this kind of lower-tier guy who's overperformed a few years back?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to figure out. Every year I kind of think that this is the year on Correa. And, you know, aside from that, we had the great rookie year, and then he was pretty good the year after. And then, you know, good average in 2017, but still only 24 home runs, although that was, he had an injury there too. I think most of it's injury related. I think we're going to see some really good prime Carlos Correa years. He's only 24, which you got to keep in mind. This is his fifth year in the majors, 24. It's pretty incredible. So I think we're going to get some good years. It's just he's got to avoid that injury bug and, you know, getting hurt. Cracking a rib in a massage. I mean, it's just so impossible to even think about. But I think we're going to get some good years. I think they're coming soon. I'm pretty optimistic. I don't know about the second half with, you know, how healthy he's going to be, but he's someone that I'll be buying in next year, hopefully at a discounted price.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was on him again this year. I was happy. And then he got hurt. And it just, we'll see how the second half goes for him. But the talent just seems so good. And even like the hard hit rates and all that stuff, it's so good. And you're just waiting for it to happen. New York Yankees, Giancarlo Stanton, the news just gets worse and worse every time I see a new article on him. Like, I think I've talked about it a million times on the show, but every time there's a new piece of news. Now they'd be shocked if he's back early August. They're thinking mid to end of August. You start getting to that point in your season and you're holding this dead weight. I know it's Giancarlo Stanton, but are you potentially dropping him, like, say, in an FBC with no IL spots?
It's really tough. It's crazy. The guy's played 9 games this year.
That's insane. He's like a late first round pick to some people.
Yeah. It's in a 10 or 12 teamer, I think that I'm dropping him based on this news. It sounds crazy and horrible, but I think the percentage chance that he comes back and fully rakes are pretty low. He was, he's striking out a lot in his small sample this year, striking out a lot last year in his first year of the Yankees. So I think that makes it so the upside's not quite as high. And I think in a 15 teamer, I'm still holding him. The replacement value is so low in a format like that I think that, five weeks of Stanton, you probably get 4 weeks. He's not going to play the last week, especially the Yankees clinch. But I think 4 or 5 weeks of Stanton now is still worth it in 15-teamer. But if I get one more setback or bad piece of news, then it becomes a drop for me in a deeper format.
Yeah, it's weird right now. Like, I dropped Cookie Carrasco the other day. We know why that whole situation goes. And that wasn't easy, and that seemed a lot easier to do than Stanton. And then, he was like Luis Severino. Now there are reports he might come back, but in a bullpen role. Well, if that's the case, hard to hold on to Luis Severino any longer. It just gets harder and harder with these guys. But Stanton, yeah, I'm glad I dodged that bullet. I know there's some people that were in love with him for obvious reasons, but it's gotten to the point, I hate using the term injury prone, but it's starting to feel a little prone. It's getting tough there with Stanton, but we'll see how that goes. Like you said, it's tough to hold on to him.
It is, and we had Tyler Glasnow today too. That had some. He's not going to throw for two more weeks, and now they're talking about they're not sure if he's going to pitch again this year. I dropped him when the first setback came out. I told myself I was going to hold him until one setback. I dropped him and out to another one. It's not even really a setback. They're just being uber cautious. They're holding off two more weeks. I just don't think you see him in a fantasy role this year that's going to help your team.
And that's a good way to put it. It's a fantasy role because he'll come back, especially if they're in the playoff run. He might get, you know, opener stuff like that because his arm is valuable. But
yeah,
the fact
sure.
that it's valuable is why they want to save it. So
yep.
it makes 100% sense. That's why, like I told guys a few weeks ago, Rich Hill, he's not coming back anything fantasy for you. They're going to baby him till the sun goes down. They want him for the stretch run. So good. No, I missed the Glasnow news. So good call there because that sucks. He was pitching so well.
It does. He was awesome the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, man, outstanding stuff. All right, speaking of the Rays, Alvarado going on the IL with an oblique injury finally gave me the excuse I needed to drop him. That was
you and me both.
I was playing that sad tale every Sunday night, so it was tough. But you got Diego Castillo's back. You got Emilio Pagan, Colin Posh. Lots of options there in Tampa Bay. It's going to be committee based most likely. But how are you approaching the situation in fantasy?
Yeah, not only a lot of options, but a team that's willing to kind of use and mix and match those options. I think the only guy that I'm really interested in right now is Emilio Pagan, 1.7 ERA so far this year with 12 strikeouts per nine. He's just been really good. I don't think he's that good, but he's been really good, and that's obviously really important with a closer. I mean, you want a team that has confidence in the closer. I think they have the most confidence in Pagan right now. Castillo just scares me a little bit with the walks. He's a good, you know, he has nasty stuff, but, you know, over four walks per nine, I just hate that of a closer. I hate watching a closer. I flip it on, he walks the first guy. I just want to turn it back off right after that. Posh has looked good, but, you know, doesn't really feel like a closer to me. I think if I had to go with somebody, I go with Pagan. I actually dropped him in one league this week. He was my fifth closer, so I just didn't trust the situation. But I think if I'm going with someone, it's him. That would be my lean right now. But I just don't love the situation as a whole, and I certainly think Alvarado is a drop and not usable the rest of the year.
Yep, I'm with you there. He's sadly gone.
Yeah.
A little fun nugget here, and we'll see if it pans out to anything. But the Royals have nothing to lose by playing Bubba Starling. They finally called him up. He was a top five pick in 2011. That was not a mispronunciation. 11. there's only a couple more players from that first round that have not made it. And one actually, it's a whole other story, is Danny Holson, who's getting a second chance, like in the Cubs system right now. But Bubba Starling's getting the chance. Saw a little power speed this year. Hit over 300 in the minors. Any interest in a guy like Bubba Starling? Like, I grabbed him for a buck in TGFBI just to get him and see what happens. I need steals badly, but could be a waste. What's your thoughts on Bubba?
Yeah, I bid on him in the main event and I NFBC, and I got I tied. I had a $3 bid. I lost him to another $3 bid. So mild interest. And like you said, I think your point at the beginning was the most important. The Royals have nothing to lose. They have no reason not to throw him out there for a couple of months. I mean, they probably want to see what they have to see if this is a guy they're going to keep in their system or kind of move on. It's been, you know, 8 years since he was drafted. But, you know, he had some injuries. He didn't play. He played, like 20 games in 2018, only 80 in 2017. Some ugly averages in the minors, some not so good stuff, but I don't know, 7 home runs and 9 stolen bases so far this year. I don't think we can really trust Triple A numbers right now. They're so inflated on offense and obviously bad on the pitching side that, you know, I tend to kind of throw some of those out or at least discount them. But yeah, I think he's worth a shot just strictly on a playing time thing. So a deeper league, an AL only league, like you said, that kind of thing would be pretty solid for him. And, you know, you might as well see what you can get. Obviously there's a little bit of pedigree. It's been a long time, but you know, someone's going to get every day at bat for a little bit. I think I'm always interested in, especially a guy that might steal, might steal 5 or 6 bags.
Yep. 5 or 6 bags could help a ton.
As the
second half goes on, that can go a long, long way. So that was kind of my thought process, because your good old co-host in League 2 and TGFBI, he got me on Malik Smith during Fabageddon. That one's he got me by like $20. I didn't think he'd go that high. And I need steals so badly. I'm really mad at myself for that one right about now. But
The Malik Smith entry in Fabageddon was really sneaky, because you had all those rookies and all those guys, and Malik's had just gotten called back up. I grabbed him in one spot that weekend too. He has 11 stolen bases since June 1st. One of only 3 guys with double digit steals. Yelich and Elvis Andrus are the 2 others. But he was really sneaky that week because everybody was so excited about the other 5 guys.
Yeah, that's why I thought I could sneak through without getting too crazy on the pricing. And now Jeff, of course, got me there.
Yeah.
So,
Damn, Erickson's always messing stuff up.
Yeah, I wish I had a good pun for him, but I don't. last question.
Thank God for that.
Sometimes they're good. Sometimes when I'm driving, I just want to like bang the steering wheel.
Yeah, I feel you there.
But last question. I have to ask an A's question here. Sure. I know we've talked about it before, and I've seen your responses on Twitter, so I kind of know your thoughts here, but I wanted to talk about them. With Blake Treinen and the mess that is Blake Treinen right now and how great Liam Hendricks is pitching, are you on board with the idea that it's just Liam's job now for the rest of the year, or do you think there's a chance that Blake gets it back?
When he went on the DL, I really wasn't. I thought that, Treinen was so obviously amazing last year, the ERA under one, that I thought that a healthy Treinen would still get one more chance. But when Bob Melvin came out and pretty much said Hendricks has earned it, it's his job right now, he came out and said that publicly meant a lot. And I think it meant a lot to Hendricks. And I think Treinen, I mean, every time he pitches, he just pitches badly. He came off the mound and he did an interview with Susan Slusser after this last night, talking about how frustrated he was and how, he just can't spot stuff. And it's just, it's really weird to see him struggle so much. I mean, the walk rate is crazy. It's 5.7 walks per nine. And you watch him and the stuff is still there and everything moves down and hard, but he just has no idea where it's going right now. I think it would take, multiple blown saves from Hendricks. And I would say multiple. I mean, probably three or four of them and Treinen to really look like himself to get it back. I think that Treinen's accepted this is his role right now. And I think he's okay with it and wants to, do what he can and kind of get back to where he is. I think it's at least Hendricks until maybe September 1st. And maybe we see something shift then. But I think it's a full go with Hendricks right now, which is different than I thought 2 weeks ago.
That is great to hear. Great to hear indeed. Shame to hear for Treinen owners, but
yes.
Yeah, Hendricks has been so good. That's what I was wondering. Yeah, good.
And throwing harder and looking good. And sometimes you guys are thrown in that role and they have a few hiccups before they really get comfortable. And he's just nothing but jump right in and be great.
Yep, no doubt about it. One thing I wanted to talk to you about why I had you on the show today is second half strategy. And I heard you guys kind of talk about it the last few weeks on your Sunday night show. And I really wanted to talk to you about it because you're a very experienced NFBC player. And that's where the biggest of the big go and play. It's quite the platform. And a lot of people, as football comes into play, you'll get some of your leagues that like people are out of it. They kind of disappear. Or some people just have the mindset, I'm in seventh place. There's no way I can make up ground. And we already talked about how five or six steals goes a long way, so on and so forth. When you're approaching the second half, and I've heard your stories about how you jump back and won leagues and you almost lost leagues and stuff. How do you approach the second half to try to like make up ground or hold ground? Like what's your strategy going forward?
I mean, I think the first thing and kind of an overarching thing is that, no lead is safe is important to know. I mean, you think like, at the All-Star break, we're almost there. We still have 2.5 months of the season. That's almost a half season of stats. And you think about how much movement there still is. I mean, I've had leagues where I was up 30 points 2 years ago on Lindy Hinkleman, who's one of the best NFBC players. And I was up 30 points on August 1st, and I was down 20 going to the last week of the season. That's a 50-point swing. And granted, I had some injuries here and there, but stuff can happen. You can get hot. Guys, if you've got someone like Jose Ramirez and starts hitting like a first rounder, teams are going to totally change. So what I like to do is I take a really fresh approach on my team at the All-Star break, and I look at where I am in the standings and not, do I have 2 points in saves, but where can I gain? Where can I drop? So I look at every spot and I kind of figure out a near-term upside. So say I have 80 points in the league, I'll look and see like in the next month, what can I get to? What do I need to focus on? It kind of gives me a small goal. Cause if you're 30 points back in the league, you're like, oh, this sucks. I'm going to look at football. But if you gain 15 points in a month, you're like, oh, this is gonna be a fun final 6 weeks. So I really take a look at kind of a short-term gain rather than looking like, oh my God, I need 38 home runs to really move. But if you know that two home runs helps you here and two stolen bases help you here and a couple of good starts, you start to get some momentum. And it's crazy in fantasy how it shouldn't work this way, but you get some momentum and you kind of get going and you're more into it. You make better moves, you make better lineup decisions. So I look at it that way, but also I look at my team. We're at the point now of the season where just because you drafted someone in the eighth round doesn't mean you have to play them every week. I get that the first couple months of the season, you're trying to really play your guys and play who you like in the beginning. But I get sometimes stuck on guys where I just automatically slot them in a week and I really shouldn't. There's players that, someone like Miguel Cabrera, if you're good in average, you're bad in power. He has 5 home runs. And, it's Miguel Cabrera. You're like, oh, he's playing my first baseman. But you got to look at that and kind of see that at this point in the season, you got to focus on what categories you need, but also not get stuck on names more than anything.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point because people have that tendency, like even in the Giancarlo Stanton, I can't drop him because I took him, 15th, 16th overall. Can't do it. So that's a fine line that you have to make with pitchers and hitters. I think that's a really good point. You talked about, you're doing well on average, but you need homers. how much is your fabbing based on your categories? And like when you look at it, you know, you're third in home runs, you're seventh in RBIs, but you know, you can gain 3 points in RBIs by getting 10 RBIs, but to, you know, gain a point in homers, you need like 15 homers or something. It varies. When you're approaching the fab market week to week, because this season especially, money is so depleted in almost everybody in the league for fab. How do you approach it? Is it like the next cool thing? Or are you getting really sneaky on, hey, this guy, you know, he's going to play 7 games this week. Great environment. I need the RBIs. Like, is there more of a focus on one than the other type thing?
Yeah, I think fab now, you know, fab in April and May is I'm looking for guys that are big hits. They're going to help me the rest of the season. They're going to be, you know, breakout guys. Like, I think in fab now, I'm looking at the next 1 or 2 weeks. I'm looking at who's playing where, who's doing well, who's getting playing time. This time of year, I think the trade deadline is really important. You know, you've got trades are going to happen in 2 weeks, but you want to be able to pick up those guys before stuff happens. You know, guys like Aaron Bummer, guys like, you know, Reyes Maranta in San Francisco. Think guys that you think might fall into closing roles, guys you think might fall into starting rotation roles on trades. It's good to grab them now for $1 or $2 because they ain't going to be $1 or $2 after the trade. So I think that's really important. But in fab, I think you got, like I said, you just got to really focus on the next 2 or 3 weeks with everybody. Now, you're not looking for big home runs. You're not looking for guys that are going to hit 40 home runs on a stretch. You're looking for guys that are going to, like we said, steal 5 or 6 bags or are going into cores this week. You know, Jeff and I talked last night about adding Mike Yastrzemski. Huge game today. In NFBC, you can play half weeks too. So, you know, if you can get a guy that's, you know, facing 4 righties or 4 lefties, however the platoon works in a half week, I think my fab focus just gets a lot more short term than it did in April and May.
No, that's a good point because people still like to see the shiny new toys. Like before he got dropped, I would have been shocked if, you know, Mauricio Dubon, if he was still up, people would have probably spent too much money on him. And he's already back down in the minors, stuff along those lines. What kind of guys, you know, like Carter Kieboom is out there right now and some other guys, how aggressive are you on prospects that, you know, might be coming up August or so compared to, like you said, I know you're focusing on the next 2 weeks, but you know, there's these prospects that you can get really cheap right now. Are you making a point to go look for guys like that? Or are you still just focusing on the 2 weeks?
I'm mostly focused on 2 weeks. And my problem with a guy like Kieboom is that teams that are going to be contenders, I'm not super interested in their rookies coming up because they tend to come up and maybe not play every day. You just can't, in fantasy wise, no matter how good the prospect is, if he's going to play 3 times a week or twice a week, you just can't use them. And they, you know, they've shown that they're not fully ready for him to play full time. So someone like that, I'm not super interested in. If there's someone that, you know, maybe on a non-contending team to come up and play every day, then yeah, I'll look at that. But it's for me, it's more when he comes up and I'll take a look at it. You know, is this someone that I want for the next 3 or 4 weeks? And if it is, great. If it's not, that's fine too. I'm much less stuck on prospect names at this point of the year than I would be maybe earlier on. We're going to get someone that's going to really contribute for 5 months.
Perfect. You mentioned it with, you know, the hitters looking 2 weeks ahead, and I'm assuming the pitchers are the same. Are you as likely to be a two-start streamer like guys were early in the season? Like, it's how many two-start guys can I get? Flip the last couple guys in my pitching, so on and so forth. Or are you more focused on, hey, I need these ratios here, and these two-star guys are going to screw me over, so I'm not going to take those gambles and stuff like that? I know it might have kind of been a little wishy-washy saying that, but you know, early in the year, everyone's looking for the two-start guys. Right. Now it's, are you more worried about quality over quantity? I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's strictly team dependent for me. I have a couple teams where I need ratios, and I'll be really careful about who I pick up. But then I have an online championship team in the NFBC where I have really good ratios, and I'm really bad in wins and Ks. I've pretty much decided my last 2 spots in my roster every week are going to be completely streamers. I'm going to drop them. Like, I picked up Mike Fiers for the short week, pitched really great. I'm going to drop him back and pick up a 2-stepper. I need wins and strikeouts, and I've got to try and max them out to make a run. So for me, it's really team dependent on kind of what you need. And if it's nice when it lines up that way, in spots where you do have good ratios and need wins and Ks, you can really be super aggressive about 2 steps. I'm gonna have a couple in that 8-9 spot every single week until maybe my ratios, you know, drop down a little bit. I'll keep a watch on them, but I'm gonna be super aggressive to try and gain those points.
And this is more of a season-long question, but you mentioned your 8th, 9th pitcher, and I've heard this philosophy a lot. When you're drafting, do you make it a point almost just, I'm going to take 2 guys late that I'm going to stream, and there's no, I'm going to flip these over and over again? Or are you still just drafting the best team, and whatever happens, happens as the season goes on?
I'm usually drafting the best team. If you get something, you know, screwy, like we had the A's Mariner series, you can kind of you know, steal a good start. I might do that. Or if I have you know, someone's facing the Marlins week 1 and it's my 29th round, then I'll do it. But it had to be something extreme like that. I'm usually trying to pick my best team there, and I try to get go into the season with a balanced team and not, you know, needing 2 steps or not needing 2 steps. And I kind of I'm more adjust kind of at this point of the year based on what I need. The first 2 months, I'm really trying to be as balanced as I can and play my best roster.
Okay. Well, that is all valuable information. We could probably free flow on this for quite a while, but Yeah, I think that the moral of the story is a lot of it's just team dependent. That's pretty simple stuff there.
Very much.
But it's kind of focusing on the now and not worrying about kind of what it was or the, like the biggest thing to me is, especially for newer players, the name value thing is so hard for people to just kind of get over. Like that's
absolutely
huge, huge part of fantasy, all sports. And I think that's the biggest thing. And with no trades like the NFBC, it makes things really tricky. That's one thing. This is my first year playing the NFBC formats, and the no trades has been the hardest part for me to continue. Like your roster construction and roster management is way different.
And yeah, my first couple years that was weird for me too. I ended up with some kind of unbalanced teams, and you kind of as you play, you figure that out, and you realize that how important balance is, and then you figure, you know, maybe you punt a category midseason if you're just playing for your league or that kind of thing. But with overall prizes, that kind of thing, you just have to be balanced. And the only other point I'd make about you mentioned name value is, I think the most important thing to do right now is be aggressive with your drops. Everybody talks about ads and, you know, next 2 weeks and all this kind of stuff we talk about a lot, but I think be aggressive with your drops. If guys get hurt and they're out 4 weeks, I think they're drops. You know, you just can't wait around for, you know, maybe 3 weeks in September, especially with starters. You know, you don't want to wait around for, oh, you might make three starts in September, because A, that never happens. And B, even if it does, what are you really missing out on? You know, that roster spot is too valuable, especially in a league without IL spots. I think that being aggressive with your drops is really important as we get later in the season.
No, that's a very, very viable point, because we said it with guys like Rich Hill and Giancarlo and stuff, but even lesser guys, like you'll try to hold on to them, but oh, they're only out for, you know, 2, maybe 3 weeks.
Yep.
Like Chris Taylor, for instance, I would drop Chris Taylor.
Me too.
But some guys are probably looking like, hey, look what he's done lately. He's been playing well. They're giving him playing time. Yeah, but by the time you get him back, what did that roster spot cost you?
And the Dodgers are 150 games up in the division, have no reason to push anybody, and all those guys are going to sit multiple games the last 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, so very, very valuable information there about just the ad drops, the going for your stuff along those lines. It's really, really important stuff there. All right, let's talk some fab. Let's get fabby. It's been kind of slow the last few weeks, as you'd expect, as this point of the season. It gets more kind of, you know, $1, $2 bids, a couple big guys. The highest guy in my league, and we'll kind of go back and forth between TGFBI and whatnot, is Andrew Cashner went for $33 in my league, and we just got done talking about him. So that one, the runner-up bid was $1, tells you everything you need to know there. And then Francisco Mejia was available. Garrett Cooper went for $23. I think that was a good one.
Me too.
To be sitting. Of course, it went to Kenneth Lee, the guy that's just running away with our league. He gets Garrett Cooper.
I thought he was only a hockey guy.
Yeah, so did I. I remember when we got our marching orders, basically our league. I went through. I'm like, okay, I know Jeff, I know Dalton, and all these other guys. I know Colin. I'm like, Kenneth Lee, okay, Guru Elite, check him out. Oh, he's a big hockey guy. Cool. Yeah, not so much. Not so much. But the next big guy was Tyler O'Neill. Went for $21, runner up bid of $4. Dropped for Jacob Junis, who's a two stepper this week, so that was kind of interesting. But Tyler O'Neill's getting the regular playing time. Marcelo Zuna, latest reports, he still can't even, like, feel everything in his hands. He can't even grip a bat yet. So he's getting setback after setback. What's your thoughts on Tyler O'Neill? I know Jose Martinez getting playing time, but O'Neill looks like he's trying to take advantage of this.
Yeah, every time I look at Tyler O'Neill or he gets called up or starts to get playing time, I get really excited. Then I look at his stats and I get less excited. He's got a 43.5% strikeout rate so far this year after a 40% last year. The power is huge. You know, he obviously looks good. Everybody likes how gigantic he is and all that. I think he might be a guy that just might be sexier than he actually is for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, I haven't been able to buy him. I don't think I've ever bid on him personally. So it's not one of my guys. But I guess people see the muscles, they see the speed, and they have hope.
I grabbed him really cheap in a couple spots last week for like $3 where I needed power. But every time I get excited about it, then he sits for a couple days, and they still seem like they want to play Bader and Fowler and Jose Martinez. So, yeah, I'd like to see him get full-time at-bats and see what we actually get. Obviously, some huge home run numbers in the minors. But if he's going to strike out that much, it's going to be really tough for him not to hit about 240.
No doubt about it. The last double-digit fab bid went to Allen of the Fantasy Fix as well. He had three of the top six. He got Eliezer Hernandez for $17. No runner-up bid. Seemed a little steep for me. But Eliezer's been decent in that rotation, but nothing too crazy. Do you have any double-digit fab guys in your leagues that kind of stood out to you? Because I don't have much in mine.
It's funny that you mentioned Hernandez. I looked at him because he was available in my leagues, but his last three outings have been in relief. So I was kind of thinking he might be on the outskirts of that rotation right now.
Yeah, I was confused by that one. Like, I know he's been good. He's looked good, but I think they're going to baby him to the finish line. So that one kind of surprised me.
Yeah, my league was very quiet. The last I'm looking, scrolling down. The last 4 weeks, we've had at least one guy over $100. This week, the high bid was $18. It was a really quiet week. We only had six teams that bid in my league, so I don't know if teams are in a league where you have no entry fee or starting to just kind of not pay attention. They're moving to football, or maybe just a quiet free agent week. There were only two bids of that backup bids. The biggest one in mine was Jalen Beeks getting called back up for the Rays. So that was a pretty nice add. Then Mark Canha got added for $11. Kind of falling in some playing time with some injuries there. But the interesting one to me in my league was actually Dakota Hudson was available.
Really?
He was like 97% owned in the TGFBI before that. He got picked up for 10. My backup bid was $8. I don't love him, but it was enough that in a 12 teamer, I was mildly interested. But then you look and not a lot of strikeouts and a ton of walks. Every time I look at him, he looks kind of good. And then I look at the metrics and stuff and I get less interested.
Big ground ball guy. Big yes. ground ball guy. That's what he does. He scares me. Like, I look at him in DFS. He's always cheap, good matchup. I'm like, he strikes no one out. This yep. is terrifying me. It really does. But in a league like this, if you're looking for ratios or something, he's not the worst. Like, he gets the job done. Just not going to help you in a strikeout department. It's funny you mentioned Jalen Beeks. He was the one that was dropped for Andrew Cashner, so I can't wait to see what the bids are next week in that one.
But, yeah, might depend how he pitches this week, but I've talked about a bunch. I mean, the Rays are just so deep. They send Brandon McKay back down, and just they have so many options. It's crazy how well built they put that team together.
Yeah, the Rays are holding me hostage because I have to hold on to Brandon McKay now, just like I had to hold on to Nate Lowe, because yep. I know they're coming back, and I'm not letting them go. Like, we just talked about knowing we're in the drop, guys. To me, that's a different story. Like, that's what I'm holding on to. But
at least Nate Lowe paid off the hold in 1 week by himself.
Ooh, 1 week by himself.
Like, yeah, that was
AL Player of the Week was announced today. Pretty crazy.
That's pretty awesome.
Pretty darn awesome. Jaime Candelario was added in our league. I know he's been really hot since coming up from the minors. Got him for $4. Close to runner up bid was $1. You have any early impressions from this kind of second chance for Candelario since he's come back up?
I looked at him in a bunch of my leagues this week, and I don't know, I just kind of the same. I think he's a batting average risk. You know, he's come back and hit well. I think he has 4 home runs in 13 games. He got called back up. But, you know, I mean, the guy played all year last year and hit .224. And, you know, you look at it and there's nothing that makes you think that it's suddenly going to bounce back. The hard hit rate's decent, but nothing that, makes me want to grab him and hold on to him. It's a ride the hot streak kind of guy, but be ready to jump off once it gets cold.
Yep, I can see that for sure. Last guy I'm going to ask you about, and if you have anybody, fire away. But AJ Reed. AJ Reed came up for the White Sox, came over from the Astros. I think they're going to give him playing time. The fact they acquired him and brought him up right away. He went for $1, no runner-up bid. We know the pedigree's there. It just hasn't come through yet. Do you have any thoughts on AJ Reed?
I do. I like that bit. I think he kind of falls in the Bubba Starling realm of, you know, prospects that are suddenly going to fall in some playing time. And that's really valuable and important. He got hit 28 home runs last year with AAA and the Astros and had 12 home runs this year. I think that, it's worth a shot. I wouldn't bid a lot because I think he's going to be a bit of a batting average drain, a lot of strikeouts, but, not massive strikeouts, not like some of the guys we've talked about earlier. But I think hitting in a good park in a place where when it gets warm in the summer, the ball's going to fly out of there. I think he's a worthwhile stab right now to see if the White Sox give him every day at bats.
Cool. Anybody else on your list, or are you good?
I do. A couple of guys. You're a Giants fan. I picked up Brandon Belt for $5 in the TGFBI. A little bit of Coors Field, just trying to play that. But, first base has been tough for me in 15 teamers. My main event team has struggled at first base. Jock Peterson got eligibility recently, which helps a little bit. But how do you feel about Belt for the last 10 weeks of the season? I know you're the Giants fan in the room.
I've always been a diehard Belt fan. I've always been the guy to stand there and pound the table saying if he played in almost any other ballpark, he'd be like a 25-plus home run guy. The tools are very, very good with Brandon Belt. And the fact you got him this week, 4 games in Coors to start the week, yep. and then just more good stuff from him. They're leading off with him. I know he went deep in Milwaukee, I believe, yesterday. I think there's a lot to like with Belt. As long as the concussions stay away and he stays healthy, the OBP leagues is huge. There's a lot to like with Brandon Belt. I think $5 is a good stab in the dark there.
Yeah, and they have 8 games this week, and 7 of those are against righties. So I really liked that. And then next week they get the Padres and the Pirates. So it kind of lined up that he just happened to see a bunch of righties coming up and in Coors Field. I thought he's worth a stab. The other guy I wanted to ask you about, I picked up Adam Jones there, and I just kind of needed a bench bat that maybe I could use if I needed to. He's got anything left in the tank for the second half?
I would say yes. He's kind of fizzled off after that red hot start. But yeah, the one thing you know you're going to get is you're going to get him playing every day for the D-backs. He's going to be in the middle of that order, especially with David Peralta out, so that they need him out in the field because technically they're one of like the 25 teams that's still in the wild card race. And I think there's going to be production there, especially in an NL West where it's a lefty-heavy division. So there's going to be certain weeks where you're going to get 3, 4, 5 lefties at times that Adam Jones will be facing. So I think there's definitely something to like there because when he's not facing those lefties, it's a lot of bad pitching as well. You get a couple of Coors stretches in there. You might have got him early before that. So, yeah, I don't mind that at all. He's not the guy he once was, but he's had some hot stretches this year. And you know Adam Jones can be quite streaky at times. So I don't hate that at all.
Yeah, and the other guy I added in TGFBI for $2 is probably my favorite spec closer right now is Aaron Bummer. I think Colomay might get traded, but I think the sneaky part about Colomay that I'm a little worried about his production right now is his strikeouts are so far off where they were, and the ERA is kind of hiding it. He has a 130 BABIP on the season.
Wow, that's not sustainable, kids.
No, and he's the strikeout rate was 9.5 last year. It's down to 6.9. I mean, that's just I get numbers go up and down, but that's enough of a sizable drop that I'm worried from a trade perspective, but B, also performance perspective. I think Aaron Bummer closes for the White Sox at some point this year, column a trade or not.
I think that's a great move. I was looking for him. He was gone in like all my leagues. So that's a real good – I would have picked him up over Diego Castillo, Colin Posh, Emilio Pagan even. I would have gone for Bummer. I think maybe not Pagan, but Pagan was not available for me as well.
Right.
But I think Bummer's a very good ad. I think he's got a lot to like there. I got a question for you since we're talking speculative closers. I added him a couple weeks. I think it was before the All-Star break. Michael Lorenzen has had shots at closing. Do you think there's a chance that he kind of takes over a role there? Because Iglesias could get traded. Otherwise, they're using him in the 7th or 8th. What's your thoughts on Lorenzen as a potential back-end guy?
Yeah, I like the ad there, too. I think that, Iglesias kind of felt like he's righted the ship a little bit recently. He kind of had that moment there where you thought he was going to lose the job and then kind of back into it. I don't know what the Reds are going to do. You know, they're in that division where, a few games separates first and last. It's pretty wild overall. They're still kind of in that mix. I think the next 2 weeks are pretty big to be that they're going to be sellers or buyers. But if they turn into sellers, you got to think that Iglesias can be a pretty big chip on the market if people are looking for closers.
Yeah, the fact that there are reports that they're buyers kind of made me laugh. But
yeah, me too.
It's the Reds doing Reds things. Dakota Hudson got the save over the weekend because Ken Giles, another massage accident, had nerve damage in his arm. Dakota Hudson was gone in my league. Not sure if he went in yours, but it looks like that's the guy for those keeping track at home.
Yeah, I grabbed him the week before. I'm kind of speculating on a Giles trade at some point. There was like a half an hour in there where Giles wasn't warming up that everybody thought that maybe he got traded. And I was thinking that I fell into Hudson really nicely. But the thing with Hudson is he's just been really good lately. Since June 1st, he's been lights out. I think the ERA is like 1.2, something like that, without looking it up. 18 strikeouts in 15 innings or something like that. He's been really good. It doesn't look good over the season, but enough for the last 6 weeks have been good enough that I think the important part is that if Giles gets moved, or if this inflammation is something more than we think it is, nerve inflammation never sounds good. I think the key with the situation is that Hudson's the next guy up, and there's a lot of situations we don't know that's necessarily the case, and I put a lot of value into knowing who the next guy up is.
Yep, that was one thing I took away from the weekend. Last question I have for you, and it's not baseball related.
Uh-oh.
Who do you have winning the Open?
Oh, that's a really good call, but I'm going to go with someone who has never won a major, who's kind of always on the outskirts, ready to break through, and I think it's finally time that Hideki Matsuyama wins, and he's 35-1 right now.
I like it. I actually wrote – I took my notes. I'm doing my Always Pressing podcast after this, and I actually wrote him down as one of my favorite DK plays this week.
Yep.
And it's just because he's so consistent. And on this course, you need to be accurate and consistent, like really need that. And with him, it's always putting. These greens are slow. They're undulating, but they're slow because of the possible wind, and the wind's not supposed to be there, so it helps – bad putters out quite a bit.
I was going to say, what is from looking at the course, what is your overall general feel? What kind of player is going to win this?
It's going to be like, because literally like all the weather points to not being bad.
Yeah.
It's just how accurate can you be? And to me, it's the approach game with your irons. Because the weird thing about this that I've from all the things I've listened to. I've listened to some Irish guys on different podcasts.
That's awesome. Nice.
And they're saying the weird part about this course is you can't really get out of the rough like you can and run it up because they're elevated greens. So you have to have iron play to land them on top of the green. It's one of the weird differences from almost every other links course they have. So if you're in trouble off the tee, it's going to be rough. The fairways are undulating, so you're going to have some weird lies. But if you have a really good iron game, a la Hideki Matsuyama, you have a very good chance of scoring and making things happen. So this could go out the window because we haven't seen anything here in forever. But that's what, it was David Faraday and then this Golf Digest Irish guy that's over there. And they're on just different podcasts, and it's different. The rough, it's not just standard rough. It's a bunch of fescue, but also, Burberry bushes and stinging nettles. It's nasty looking. It's not your normal rough. So it'll be interesting.
I like that right up for Hideki. I think the time is finally here. If you just give me a zero strokes gained putting week, and I think I like his chance. What's your pick?
I'm torn right now. I'm on the ropes with I'm leaning Patrick Cantlay right now.
All right.
But two longer shots that I think could be sneaky if they're driving it okay off the tee. Patrick Reed plays really good on links golf, and he's 90-1. And then Kevin Kisner, who played well last year at the Open. Yep. He's coming in pretty decent form. He didn't play that well at the Irish last week, but I like the way he's been playing of late. He's 140-1. He could be interesting.
He always he always seems kind of grumpy to me, though.
Oh, the thing is, he's not. That's the thing is, the practice round, aka also thanks to Scott, he hooked it up with some practice round tickets to the Open.
You're welcome. I'm just happy to help you out. Yeah.
So we walked the course all day, and then the second groups were going out in the afternoons. So we were by the putting greens. Spieth and all of them were there, and Kisner was playing with them. Kisner walks out there. He still kind of smelled from the night before. But I'm just sitting there on a ledge. We're just kind of talking to different reporters that are coming by. He walks right up, starts dapping it up, asks how we're doing. He's happy as can be.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, that's good.
He was awesome. I was like, wow, where'd that come from? Totally. We weren't even yelling at him or anything. He just walked right over, started talking to us.
Because he always has that look when he looks unhappy on the course.
Yeah, because I listened to that little interaction, I looked up a couple of interviews he's had. He's very, he tilts easily.
Okay.
That's the best way I could put it is.
All right.
And he doesn't like the U.S. Open. He doesn't like the USGA. He hates how they ruin good golf courses.
Right.
So he's a chip on the shoulder type guy.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. What do you put? How much stock do you put into Rory and Graham McDowell having played the course 400 million times?
I think there's going to be a lot to like about that. But then what Faraday and these guys were saying is they've even changed it in the last year that these guys haven't seen.
All right.
And they're really concerned, and it kind of surprised me. They're concerned with the idea of all the pressure on them to have to do all the kind of hospitality stuff and not focus on winning the major championship.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because there's a lot of extra stuff they're going to have to do. Like McDowell's an ambassador to this thing. Rory obviously is Rory.
Right.
But there's going to be a lot of time and put into this. It's going to be weird. But if anybody, Rory, he's made for stuff like this. So we'll see. Regardless, it's going to be fun. This is literally, people get mad at me. This is my favorite major. I love this major.
We both live on the West Coast. I love the fact that midnight, there's suddenly live golf on.
Yeah, I looked at DraftKings and 10 p.m. is lock.
Oh, that's a good thing. I'm a procrastinator. That's a good thing you told me that.
Yeah, 10 p.m. lock Wednesday night, Scott.
That's beautiful. I'm turning that on so I can hear the guy. I can hear the guy introduce the golfers. It'll be fun. I love getting a few holes in before I go to bed.
Yeah, a few before I go to bed, and then my wife makes fun of me every year because Sunday, I set my alarm to wake up earlier than normal to watch the finals.
I wake up probably at 5 a.m. on Open Sunday every year.
Yep, I'm with you there. It's good stuff. But as you guys can tell, I could talk to Scott all day, but I won't keep him much longer. Before we wrap it up, why don't you let everybody know what you got going on at RotoWire? You mentioned the podcast, you got your Oaked Corner, and where they can find you.
Yeah, I do. I do a podcast with Jeff Erickson every Sunday night. So if you're East Coast, that'll be Monday morning, late Sunday night. It usually goes up. That's the baseball podcast. I do write a Oaks Corner article, kind of wrapping up the week. I do a lot of fab coverage, talking about who to pick up on the week, talking about closers. I usually highlight one series of the weekend, kind of the best series to watch over the weekend. That comes out usually Friday midday on the site at RotoWire. And then Andrew Laird and I will be doing the DFS podcast for football for RotoWire every Friday during the season. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't love season long fantasy football as much as baseball, but I do love DFS football. So it'd be fun to talk to Andrew. He's a really good DFS player.
Yep. Looking forward to it. Everybody go check him out on Twitter at Scott Genstead. Always good stuff, Scott. We'll do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
always. Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 189 with Scott Genestead of RotoWire. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.